She's back. The best-selling author, Lindsay Kelk, is back on the podcast this week. But as many of you will know, she's also one of my closest friends. So please expect a conversation that is both intimate, random, but hopefully entertaining.
It's very funny because I would consider myself someone very risk-averse. Like, I like a nice, safe, cozy existence. I am anti-confrontation in every way, shape, or form. And risk to me means at some point you may have confrontation, and I don't care for that. I've heard you don't have washing machines in your homes. Tell me more. No, I genuinely have seen a massive, massive improvement in skin tone and clarity. And I think a little bit of, looks a little bit more plump in the face. No, I'm a huge diehard advocate. It is a Christmas movie. I can always come back again. Apparently that's my theme song. I can always come back again.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Yeah.
My guest today is Lindsay Kelk, the best-selling author and award-winning podcaster who, at last count, has written, and I don't even know the precise number, but it's well over 20 books at this stage. Lindsay joins me at a pivotal point in her writing career. She has numerous projects in production at the moment. A new book will be hitting shelves early next year, she says with a question mark, looking for a nod from Lindsay. And at the time of recording, her book, The Christmas Wish, which she came to London and did an amazing tour in exactly a year ago, is coming out in paperback. She is an extremely busy person, and trust me, you won't find a better resource on Taylor Swift, wrestling, and Buffy trivia than the Kelkster. She's also one of my people, and though we'll navigate the usual topics that you would expect us to on this episode, please do anticipate some tangents. My main hope is that at least one of her cats, Anderson, Bell, and Orchester, make an appearance during this conversation. And as I say that, I realise, should I have referenced Jeff?
I mean, he's unlikely to make an appearance. If he does, he's a badly behaved cat/husband. He's been told to stay out, so we'll see.
That won't last long. He'll pop his head around at some point. I kind of hope he does. Hello, Jeff. Anyway, how art thou, Lindsay Kelk?
I'm fine. I keep saying I'm fine, and then I can see myself in the video, and it's like, maybe we should have brushed our hair instead of just pinning it back and hoping for the best. I swear this hair looks really good in real life because it's like a messy updo that's braided in the back. This is amazing podcast content for people who can't see it.
We've started
but,
strong.
I like to be relatable, and I think anyone thinking about a forward-facing camera would understand what stress I'm under now. It's putting a lot of pressure on the conversation, being able to see myself.
I think we both, if we're being honest, both maybe could have taken a little bit more of a run-up today. I should have done more. I shouldn't have worn black.
And you look great. You look magical. I love it.
It's also, I was saying to Lindsay listeners, it is one of the wettest and greyest days to have existed in England for a while. And because Lindsay is born and bred in the UK, when she's over there in Los Angeles living her glamorous life, I can just message her sometimes and just say, hey, Lindsay, remember those grey, wet days? We're having one of those.
Yeah, she does. She does remember them. That's why she won't come back. That's a broad part of why she pays California taxes, because it's not okay. It turns out humans don't have to live that way necessarily. But in order to not live that way, you must pay a premium and live in a city full of idiots. So it swings and roundabouts,
everywhere.
Really. Do have to drive everywhere, and I am against that because of driving.
You are so good at it, and every time I come to LA and we drive around, I am constantly in awe, because I don't mind driving in this country, although I'm not a big fan of driving in central London. But the idea of getting in a car in Los Angeles terrifies me. Genuinely, I wouldn't want to get behind the wheel.
No, it should. And I don't even say, oh, don't be silly. Because it terrified me for, I've been in LA for nearly 9 years. And I want to say a good 2 years before I could just get in the car without thinking about it. And even now, if I'm going on the freeway or if I've got to do like a long drive, and a long drive equates to anything over 40 minutes, I do still have to think about it, and I have to plan out my route, and I have to know exactly where I'm going. I like to know which lane I need to be in well ahead of time.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, and I live with someone who really just decides to make that decision last minute and has fallen into an LA trap of like indicators, really? Optional. And it's not optional, Emma. And if I ever get divorced, it will be because I started shouting, well, if you use your indicators, they know you wanted to get over one too many times.
There should be a clause, shouldn't there, in divorces in Hollywood, not irreconcilable differences, but just like indicator differences.
Yeah, indicator issues. refusal to wear sunscreen, despite. I just think it's a different world. It's a different set of relationship responsibilities that I wasn't prepared for.
I think the other thing that I'm always surprised by when I come to LA is the fact that I think if you just watch LA through the television or the film screen, mm-hmm. you might think that like Brad Pitt or famous people are on every corner, but actually it's quite a normal town, really.
Yeah, I mean, to quote my brother directly the first time he came, said, wow, I didn't expect it to be this much of a shithole. And he's from Doncaster and lives in Sheffield. And I am also from Doncaster. So I felt that, you know, I was like, yeah, no, I do hear what you're saying. Because large chunks of the city are just broadly in disrepair. And we have a massive unhoused community problem. As you can imagine, the climate is very nice. So if you are living out on the street, if you don't have a home, this is not a terrible place to be, because climate wise, you can be out on the street. But it does make for a sort of problematic situation for those people and for everyone else, which is terrible. We're trying to fix it. We all voted to pay more in taxes and nothing's happened, but we did vote to fix it. That was nice. But yeah, it's a weird place because it goes from being ultra beautiful and bougie and $10 million houses on every corner. And that's a reasonably priced house, to being just like, oh, look, a Walmart. And you don't know when it's coming. You don't know when it's coming.
I was watching, because I obviously, you have to binge watch Selling Sunset. You can't do it in one. You can't
be watched in
space
one
it out.
Time.
Because
no.
If you watched one episode and then thought, I'll come back to that later, you would just never go back because it's so forgettable. So you have to binge watch the entire series. But I find myself getting to watching it. And then when they're like, we've got a really minor listing, we've got a 2.5 million pocket listing. And I look at it and I think, well, yeah. And they make that look like that's.
Yeah.
Sort of, oh, yes, we've shown you all the big houses with the 22-car garage and everything, but this is where everyone really lives. And it's like, no, yeah. No, it's not.
No, it's crazy. It's very strange. My neighborhood, in the last 10 years, prices have literally doubled. Prices have doubled in 10 years. Yeah. I don't care for it. I'm against it. Broadly unhappy about it. But as I mentioned, we chose this. Some of us chose this. So
I do have a question to ask you about California.
Yes.
And because you live there, I wonder if you know anybody who lived there under the stewardship of Governor Schwarzenegger and what they made of him.
I mean, I definitely do. But I can't say that they've ever spoken directly to it, apart from, I don't want to upset you because I know you love him. And I enjoy him also and his little horses, his donkey in the kitchen, not a euphemism. I believe the general accepted theory is he wasn't that great.
Oh.
But it's also a really fucking hard place to govern because it's so big. California is, I can't stress enough to you, like, it's enormous and generally considered to be ungovernable. And every couple of years, they're like, should we split it into two places to govern? Because Northern California and Southern California are so different and so massive. So it's not an easy job. I will say it's not an easy job, Arnold. And I wasn't here. so I can't speak to it.
No, a conversation for another time. But
yeah,
I do enjoy Arnold, but if I also would hope I wouldn't have the bias of just thinking that anything that he did was amazing. Like I didn't
have. I told you the story about when my uncle met him when he was a bodybuilder. I don't think I ever have.
Well, Lindsay, how the hell?
I know. I don't know
like,
why.
We've gone to Palm Springs together. We've gone to Las Vegas together. We have been in the car for hours. And okay, fair enough. We were singing along to Taylor Swift.
We were.
You've had ample opportunity to tell this story.
I don't know why it hasn't come up before. So when he was doing bodybuilding, he was touring the UK doing like bodybuilding shows and stuff. So this is a million years ago. And he came to my village, like my actual village. He came to Harworth and Burcoats. And my uncle was a BT engineer and he did like lighting and stuff on the side for shows and audiovisual stuff. And I mean, the story when I was a child in the 80s and 90s was that he bounced your Uncle David on his biceps. But I don't believe that as an adult, I don't believe that happened. Mm-hmm. But I do believe he met him. And there is proof that he was in the village. Like there's local newspaper cuttings and stuff that he was in the village and that Uncle David feasibly was there running the AV that night. I fully have to go detective on this because I'm like, I call bullshit on everything my family ever tells me. So I did have to do a bit of a deep dive. He did bounce him on his biceps allegedly in the 1970s.
When you said there was proof he'd been in the village, I just imagined like an Arnold shaped hole in a wall he accidentally walked through.
I wish. I mean, you'd have thought a statue at least. I mean, he's the best celebrity we've ever had there.
That's very
and
cool.
Yeah, and there's nothing I actually get, you know, my nan had to tell me. So
it's a, his
I think
story,
it should be more well known.
His story is very once in a generation. No one's ever, no one will ever be able to do exactly that kind of thing again.
No, because the whole thing of like, sorry, the whole thing of where he came from and how he grew from that and go from bodybuilder to action star to politician to donkey owner. It's a wild ride that you couldn't predict it.
Do you know how he became a donkey owner, seeing as you asked?
I don't know how he became a donkey owner.
So he had a horse. It was Catherine's horse.
Yeah.
And she lost interest in the horse when she moved out / started dating. And so the horse was living on Arnold's property, but sort of not anywhere near the house. Mm-hmm. And he felt a bit sorry for the horse and said, oh, just let him. We've got quite a lot of land near the house. Let the horse come up to the garden. And said it was like, aww, he was so happy. And then Heather, his girlfriend, knows quite a lot about horses and said, I think the horse is lonely. So they got the donkey to keep the horse company.
To be friends with the horse.
And now
this is why
friends.
You shouldn't buy posh girls' horses because they're going to lose interest. That's what I took away from that because I went to school with someone that had a horse and we all hated her. But this is what I'm learning is don't buy posh girls a horse if they're not going to look after it.
Because they lose interest and marry Chris Pratt.
It's not like a gerbil, is it? It's not a guinea pig where we can deal with that. But it's a horse, Catherine. It's a horse. It's a whole horse. Think about yourself.
And I did see Arnold the other day at the Royal Albert Hall. And I'm almost certain that Patrick Schwarzenegger was in the crowd as well. Because he's got a very distinctive build. Quite a long neck. Mm. And I saw the
swan-like. Swan-like.
He has. And I got very excited. And I was like, oh, I think that's Patrick Schwarzenegger.
So, and yet my Uncle David was not there being bounced upon his biceps.
Maybe he wasn't. And Patrick
he
wasn't
definitely
accompanied
wasn't.
By a horse.
He's not going all the way back down to that London. Are you kidding me? Leave in the village.
Right.
I don't think so.
So let's talk about, because I always ask people about risk.
So, yes.
Let's.
I believe
about...
I've taken many of them already.
Just in this conversation. When I think about so many of the things that you have done, first of all, you had a very successful editing job at HarperCollins, which is one of the biggest publishers in the world, and you were very good at what you did. And then you said, I want to, don't make that face because you were.
I mean, I honestly, though, I was successful. I won't say I was very good at it, but I was there at the right place at the right time. I was a hard worker. I think that was, I was able to be promoted pretty young and get some very cool spots out of it, but I can't hand on heart say it was really good. I had to work really hard.
Was the bar like, was there a pinnacle of that particular period, like the Girls Aloud stuff? Or
I mean, the Girls Aloud annual was pretty exciting. The Mary-Kate and Ashley style secrets. So yeah, I worked on film and TV and brand tie-ins. So I brought in anything that was film and TV or a brand, and was able to write some of those books too.
Didn't you essentially give Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen the idea for The Row?
I'd like to say I did, not a jury in the land could convince anyone otherwise. Yeah, we did a book called Style Secrets, which was basically heavily inspired by Trini and Susanna. I say we, I did a book called Mary-Kate and Ashley Style Secrets, and their branding company, their licensing company, was like, yeah, cool, whatever, do what you want, but like, keep us out of it, basically. And then we sent it in and they were like, oh, they like it. And then they wanted to be more involved and sent me really unhelpful fashion tips to add to a style book for tweens, like buy vintage watches to make your outfit more unique. And I'm like, well, like, I'm gonna change Rolex to watch. And they were a big fan of telling 11-year-olds in the UK to get their clothes tailored to fit them. And I'm like, I just don't think they're gonna. But you know, let's leave that in then. Sure.
Do we think billionaires Mary-Kate and Ashley had maybe lost touch with reality a little
bit? It's possible that they, very young as though they were at the time, they weren't really thinking from the perspective of like an 11-year-old in Northampton. And I was trying to put myself in that position, and they physically couldn't, like, they just literally could not. It's not possible.
They are,
so it's
good
not
actors,
their fault,
but they're not
are they? It's not their fault, but it was a fun project to work on, and it was cool when they did decide that they didn't hate it and were prepared to be associated with it. So that was nice, because they did send in some cool stuff. And then, yeah, I met them at an event and they were merrily telling me about their plans for fashion lines. And I was like, oh, so cute. And then more fool me all these years later on. I'm like, wow.
So you were very well established there doing an all right, being successful at something by chance. And then you decided that you wanted to pivot and write novels, write books. Mm-hmm. And then also you wanted to relocate from London to New York. And then, of course, on that journey, you've relocated from New York to Los Angeles. And I was considering this with another guest recently, the idea that everything that we do in our 20s seems ludicrous now if you actually thought about having the same idea and doing it in your 40s, because I did. There was just a different set of stakes at play, because I don't know if you would change careers now in the way that you did then. But did you see it as being risky, or did you just think, this is what I need to be doing?
It's very funny, because I would consider myself someone very risk averse. Like, I like a nice, safe, cozy existence. I am anti-confrontation in every way, shape or form. And risk to me means at some point you may have confrontation, and I don't care for that. But when the opportunity arose to move to the States, because I was working at Harper in the UK and a job came available in the US and someone asked me if I'd be interested, blah, blah, blah. Obviously I was, and obviously I did. That did not feel like a risk at the time. It felt very natural, which, yeah, I think now I'd be like, what were you thinking? I went over to meet the team after I'd gotten the job, and they asked me if I had any questions. And I thought they meant just broadly. And I was like, I've heard you don't have washing machines in your homes. Tell me more. And later on, the VP of children's was like, yeah, we thought you were going to have questions like about the job. And I was like, oh yeah, no, none of those. I was very concerned about where I was going to wash my pants. And also how I was going to get a new mobile phone. Like, I had practical concerns, but it just didn't bother me. And I can't tell you why, because everything about me that I believe about myself said that it really should have been scary. But I guess I just thought I could always come home if it didn't work. And I kept telling myself that until I have now been here for 14 and a half years. We can always go home.
Yeah.
But it was a huge risk. It was a huge risk, because I was leaving a job that I'd been in for 5 years, that I was really well established in. I had a really great network. I had a lot of support in the company in the UK, which I did not have when I got to the US office. And as you say, I just started on my author career as well. So my first book came out a couple of weeks before I moved to New York. So even leaving that in another country was a risk, because it's like leaving your baby with the babysitter, and trying to establish yourself in an adjacent career in another country, in a company where you don't really know anybody, you don't know the culture, and you don't know what it's going to be like, whilst also trying to nurture another career that asks a lot of you, creatively and time-wise, it was a huge risk. I see now, but at 28, let's do it. Let's go for it, kids.
I just think that I also think that, like, for now, if someone said, right, Emma, would you like to relocate to the States? I would have to move to an equivalent comfort level. Whereas I think when you're in your 20s, you'll, to an extent, take what you're... I know you and I both like that. We'll just take it given. But no. We both lived in crap holes.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I was coming out of a pretty miserable relationship when all of this happened as well. So I think it was all perfectly timed, you know, to be like, everything's a bit shit. It is time to do something different. But I did leave from having my own really lovely flat that I absolutely loved to sharing a flat with two other girls. And I hadn't shared since uni. I was like, what? What? Because I'd moved in with my boyfriend straight after uni. I'm like, I have to share a flat with one bathroom with two girls I don't know. But yeah, it was that total 20-something thing where I just threw myself in and said, cool, you know, what's the worst that could happen? It'll be fine. But without ever actually thinking, what is the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very different. And even when I then moved to LA 6 years later, it was similarly, I was in a situation where it was time to do something. Like, I had stuff going on. Like, I just lost my mum and my nan, and it was just a very tough time. And it was the right time to make a change without it feeling, you know, I think if you're in a really amazing, comfortable spot, it's harder to say, let's mix it all up. Whereas if everything's sort of in flux and you're not really sure, you probably should stay where you are. But that's when Lindsay says, let's fuck things up. Let's move across the country. And yeah, I was just like, let's do it. I can always come back again. Apparently that's my theme song. I can always come back again.
I swear to God, if there is a song on Taylor Swift's next album, which is I Can Always Come Back Again.
There will be. I'll speak to her. I'll chat with her about it.
I forgot which album it's on now, because I'm not as big a fan as it's the I'm the Problem, It's Me album.
Oh, Midnights.
Midnights.
Yeah, you're going to talk about You're On Your Own, Kid.
That is my catchphrase from therapy. Yeah. And I'm like, has she been listening to the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, she's got a lot of time on her hands, as we know. She's not busy. I bet she just sits at home scanning through the top 10 podcasts and went, this one looks fun. I like the look of these ladies.
I like to think that she sits with Olivia and Meredith and reads your books and or listens to my podcast.
I like to think so. I like to think there's little Benjamin Button like pushing a paperback through the apartment while she's watching SVU and drinking white wine with ice cubes in it, saying, Mum, will you read this to me? And she was like, wait for this episode about the baby being found in a cooler in the Hudson River to be over, and then I will read it. Because you've got to find balance. Do you know what I mean? You can't be all SVU. It's got to be rom-com as well.
Got to be rom-com as well. I don't know, where do we go from here?
Sorry. I'm so sorry, everybody.
I'm taking it the baby is not okay. The baby in the cooler.
Oh, that episode of SVU. It wasn't. But it's a whole thing, and it turns out not to be as dark as it could have been. Obviously, it's pretty dark because there's a baby in a cooler. But it turned out the baby had sadly already expired before it went in the cooler, and I think it was a teenage mother, as I recall. But it was something where it was just someone was afraid and didn't know what to do, and they popped the baby in the cooler, as I recall, having just watched it on Saturday at midnight.
I feel like what just happened here is what happens on TikTok, where you see 90 seconds of a television show, and then because I have never watched the Anna Delvey program that's on Netflix.
Okay.
I started and I was like, I'm not into it. Every time I open TikTok, it just serves me little clips from that show. And actually, it's on my list now. It's on my list to watch, because I've probably seen, no word of a lie, 45 minutes of that series.
Yeah, that's a whole thing on TikTok. That was a big part of what's happening with the writer's strike and the SAG strikes over in LA. That was a big part of it, because networks and production companies are serving up whole episodes of shows on TikTok in tiny, tiny bite-sized increments to get people to watch it. But there's no residual, obviously, for the writer or the performer in that way of watching it. And yeah, you can watch whole movies, you can watch whole TV shows. It's really weird. It's a strange one. But it's definitely turning people onto things they might not have otherwise seen.
And also, I watched binged Selling Sunset the other day, and then all of a sudden I'm just being fed Brie and G Flip. So and I was having dinner last night with Ruth Crilly, and I was telling her, and she said, do you not think that's really terrifying? And I said, well, we've been surveilled by BT lines.
I feel like we've done this to ourselves, because that's the thing with TikTok is people warned me about TikTok forever. And it was like, don't get TikTok. My friend who works for the government cannot have it on her phone, like is legally not allowed to have it on her phone. And that should make me think maybe stay off TikTok. But does it, Emma? No. Does it make me actually follow delightful gay men in Alabama making chicken noodle casserole instead every day? Yes, it does. That's what it makes me do. I spend more and more time on TikTok every single day. They have got me. That's a risk. That is a risk. Opening TikTok.
For someone who's risk averse, because the amount, like you, people who are connected, who are more serious folk than you or I, no disrespect, who may have connections to government or very serious organizations, when you say those two words to them, their faces just drop. The blood drains out of their face, and they're like, they tell you wordlessly, do not do it. And yet absolutely we do. But then that's how you and I talk a lot of the time via Michaela videos.
Exactly. How else would I know how to make my eyeliner nice and sharp if I didn't go on TikTok? It's asking too much of me. Anything. Also, I'm sorry, I'm so cynical these days. I'm like, anything the Chinese government needs to know about me, they know. And I don't think they need, I think they probably had a look at my account and they said, she's all right, leave her alone. She's got her own stuff. She's going through her own stuff. Let's not bother this one. I don't know. I've become very cynical about everything at the moment, where I'm like, it is what it is. And I need to not forget to tightline, you know? So I need my Michaela videos.
It really distresses me that she gets upset about people mimicking her voice, because I think her voice is amazing. But
I love her.
I when she says bro, my day is made.
Bro.
Yeah. When she's talking about how much a highlighter is gleaming. Listeners, if you don't know who Michaela is, it's Michaela, is it Nogueira? Is that how you say
Nogueira,
her name?
Nogueira, I think, yeah. / Hawken now. So,
oh, yeah.
But I believe her username is still Michaela Nogueira.
And she is an incredible makeup artist, but she's just one of the most fun people to follow. And she will put on the most gleaming, beautiful highlighter and just be like, bro. And it's so
it makes
unexpected.
Me so happy.
Yeah.
As a recovering sexy robot highlighter addict myself, as someone who, when highlighter came in, went hard on highlighter, it fills my heart with joy to see someone. I just really love to see people who love the thing that they love. That was a very clumsy sentence. I'm a writer,
but it gives me joy.
To see anyone enjoying the thing that they love to the extent that she enjoys makeup, it makes me happier to know that that amount of joy is accessible in the world for people.
Do you think it's okay? So that's an interesting point, actually, because I love makeup and makeup takes up part of my job. I love interviewing. Mm-hmm. Interviewing takes up part of my job. But I don't love it all the time in the same way. And sometimes I need a break from it. And sometimes do you have that?
Oh, absolutely. And I was going to say, I'm sure Michaela does too, but we know that she does, because she's actually very honest with how she speaks about her mental health and what she wants and needs out of the world. And we all go through phases, I think, of being like, oh, fuck this. I love writing. Like, I love telling stories. I love making shit up. As my mother would tell you, I'm a little liar. And now I made that my job. But yeah, I absolutely will go through phases where I'm like, the last thing I want to do today is open this laptop. And I say that knowing how privileged I am for that to be my job and how lucky I am and what a gift it is to have that opportunity. But as soon as something becomes an obligation, right? Like, you're going to have days where you're like, oh, fuck this. Like, I also love professional wrestling. But we'll still have weeks where I'm like, I just don't want to watch it because I've got to watch it to talk about it on a podcast that I am on. But I just don't want to. I don't have any love for it this week. The only thing I will never tire of course, is Taylor Allison Swift, which I keep waiting to get tired of because I'm getting a ram down my throat 24/7 at the moment and it's not happening. I think I'm in love with her. I'm just putting it out there. I think we had a crush now.
We had some sound issues at the beginning of this recording and they were entirely my fault, not Lindsay Kelk's. I will put that on record and on tape. And I couldn't hear Lindsay. And so we were just miming the bit from her concert where her in-ear monitors failed. And so she was looking at the bassist. We knew exactly what the other was doing.
Yeah.
Because we have both watched that clip from the Eras tour. I know I've watched it at least 50 times. That's what the Chinese government know about me.
Yeah, this is why they're not concerned about me. They're exactly. Like, do you know what? She's busy. She is busy. I'm currently deeply engrossed in a TikTok series. I can't remember the name of the guy, but I will send it to you. Of a gay man who has been a Beyonce fan forever and ever, who is starting his journey into Swiftiedom. I think he's in his 30s. I want to say he said he was in his 30s, but basically he had listened to Slut! ! And that was his gateway drug. Suddenly he was like, wait, this song's amazing. I'm going to listen to others. And there is he's doing a TikTok diary every day of being a Swiftie. He's on about, I want to say day 8 or 9-ish now. And everyone's
is it a bit
in
like
his
the Dylan
DMs.
Mulvaney diary?
It's like... so, it's not, but it should be. It's so earnest. And he's so wonderful. And one of the things he said at the very beginning was like, it's crazy because he always calls her this lady, which I love. I'm like, she's probably older than him, but it's like, this lady, her fans are amazing because they're just in my DM saying, welcome to the Swiftiedom, welcome to the Swiftiedom. If you like that song, you should try this song next. And he's like, whereas all other fandoms would be like, oh, you're just now finding out she's good, are you? And it's really warmed my heart. But watching this guy go through his journey of falling in love song by song and really not knowing anything about her, because he was talking about Dancing With Our Hands Tied, which is an album track from Rep. And he was like, I'm obsessed with it. And I'm obsessed with the lyrics and I can't get over it. And I don't know who she was dating at the time. I don't know what it's about. I don't know any of that. But like, this is what I love about the song. And it's been wild watching this person just fall in love with her discography completely independently and not attached for any reason. I don't remember why we're talking about this, but I will send it to you.
Because you said you will never tire of Taylor Allison's
I will never tire of it, and neither will that man now, because he's in his rep era. He posted one yesterday saying like, why are we all freaking out that she's got black nails, but now I'm freaking out that she's got black nails. Does that mean Rep is coming? And I'm like, oh,
I
love him.
Listeners, we are recording this on November the 8th, 2023.
Yes.
Lindsay's paperback of The Christmas Wish comes out on the 9th of November, 2023.
Yes.
But it is hotly anticipated that on the 10th of November, 2023, Reputation, Taylor's version, will be released.
I could see it getting announced, but I can't see it being released.
Oh, see?
If I'm honest.
That's where I've gone wrong.
Well, Ben, you're not wrong. A lot of people are saying they think it will get just stealth dropped on the 10th. But where's the opportunity to sell merch? Which is where I think we've all gone wrong. But I could see it being announced because she's back on tour. She's on tour from the 9th, right? I think it starts again on the 9th. So
she'd coincide with the Christmas
wish.
It
was really nice of her. Yeah, she did call me and say, should I put it up on the big screens? And I was like, do you know what, Taylor? Don't knock yourself out because that's out of sync and it's not fair on everybody else. There's a lot of Swifties out there and I didn't want to put her in that position. There are people listening to this now. I think I mean that. I'm so sorry. I'm a monster. She didn't. I don't know her.
One day she'll call one of us.
One day.
And we'll just
day.
Be like, and the other one will be like, hold on, I'm just going to conference in.
Yeah. No, one day what will happen is we'll get a DM from someone in their management. And we'll go, fuck off, that's not real, but it will be. And we will ruin it for ourselves. That's what will happen.
Or it will be a cease and desist.
I mean, I am broadly expressing my love for Taylor through my medium of books at the moment. So I might get a cease and desist any moment.
I don't even care if you enjoy it or not, because it's one of my favourite things. But when I get a copy of your book, and usually I'm very lucky because I do get a preview copy, I enjoy reading it. And then in real time, as I am reading it, sending you screen grabs, circling the bit that I know is a Taylor reference and sending it to you, because I almost think it's like a game of hide and seek and you want me to find them.
Easter egg. I've always been an Easter egg fan in my books, and all of my adult rom-coms are interconnected in some way, even if it's just one character will pop up or something, because I always loved reading series as a kid. Like, I loved Sweet Valley High and that kind of thing. So I really like the idea of an interconnected universe, which I will say I did before Marvel, but no one will believe me. Look it up. I definitely did ish. But I really, really love the idea of planting little things for people to find that, because I think it's so fun when you see something like that. It's such a reward, and it enhances the experience for me. So I love an Easter egg, love a Taylor Easter egg. The next book that's out next summer is not so much an Easter egg as I have just fully lifted a song title. But it works for the book. So it made sense.
I immediately thought Love Me Do, but it's not Love Me Do, because
That's been and gone. Old news, yesterday's jam. it's Love Story. Love Story is out next summer, which is, for the people who don't know, a Tay-Tay song.
A Tay-Tay song. Yes, I enjoy it hugely. So in terms of Easter eggs, though, how difficult are they? Because, okay, let's take this away from Taylor, and let's put this back into a literary reference.
Yes.
I remember reading Wuthering Heights. Sorry, we're going there. I was at school. And there's one thing that always really stood out to me, because I had this amazing teacher who pointed it out, which is at the beginning of the book, when my memory is not that good. The guy
Rochester?
No, that's Jane Eyre. Oh. The one who's renting the house, who goes over to Wuthering Heights.
Oh, yes. Heathcliff and his gang.
Yeah, so it's Hareton, the son.
I've got an English degree. Yes.
Has to open the gate for the visiting. Someone is listening to this and they are screaming the name of the
I snare. Know, and I apologise. Yes, I love Wuthering Heights. I've got like a million versions of it, and yet here we are.
But there's just a significant thing of, at the beginning, when he tries to open the gate to get into the grounds, onto the land of Wuthering Heights, Hareton has to come and open the gate. And then when Hareton is made the rightful owner, the gate opens with ease to anyone, because the rightful owner is symbolic. And so I remember at the time thinking, oh gosh, that's clever, that something that you put in at the beginning is neatly...
Foreshadowing.
So my question has always been, I don't actually think I've asked you this in the same way. You never told me about your uncle bouncing on Arnold's biceps, and I've never directly asked you this question. But how difficult is it to weave in an Easter egg? Do they just sort of magically appear, or do you have to consciously? Do you have a timeline on your wall that I haven't seen of all way that your multiverse connects?
No, that would be really impressive, wouldn't it? That would make sense. Yeah. No, I have nothing. I'm very much a wing it person when it comes to writing. If I overplan or if I try to be clever, it will just be terrible. Truly, the more planning I do and the longer I have to work on something, the worse it tends to be. Because I do better when I'm just, it's so pretentious, but I do better when I'm just like in it and just going with it. And the more I try, the more you can tell I've tried. Like, my books are very pacey and fast to read, and it's because I write that way, and the longer I take over it, I feel like you can feel it slowing down in the writing. And with certain Easter eggs related to musicians that will remain nameless, they do just pop in, because it's just part of my DNA at this point. And it's actually now a case of having to pull them back a bit. Like, maybe we've gone too far. Maybe don't take the piss. But I've always done it. I think with music that I love, like, I was listening to The National forever at one point when I was living in New York, and I remember there being like a ton of National references in one book, and I didn't even notice until I read it, and I was like, oh, we were listening to that a lot, weren't we? We were listening to High Violet a lot. So it does happen. Yeah, I guess there are certain things that you plant, like those, when it's a character crossover, you have to plan that, I guess, because otherwise I don't want it to ever feel forced. I want it to feel natural, and like it could absolutely happen organically. But when it's just like song quotes or little moments, they just pop up.
Yes.
Just pop up.
And the other thing that I found quite interesting, I've never really thought about what the writing process would be like, because having never thought about or attempted to, or I did write one very short story about, like, which I think I sent you once, because I was like, I'll write like a fan fiction. It was basically like a love story for me and Tom Hiddleston that was only...
Love it.
It was only about 700 words. It didn't go beyond that.
It doesn't need to be more. That's all it needs to be. As long as it's doing its job, it doesn't matter how long it is.
It wasn't up there with, what was the Harry Styles and Louis?
Oh, God, the idea. I thought you meant the actual book that came out that was Harry Styles fan fiction, of which they've made an Anne Hathaway movie. It's killing me.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, God, yeah. There's a book that came out a couple of years ago called The Idea of You. It wasn't for me. It was very successful. It was very popular. And it's about an older woman who falls in love with a member of a boy band and they have a tumultuous affair. And they've made a movie out of it with Anne Hathaway. And I'm so conflicted.
Does anyone spit on Chris Pine at any point?
I don't think they do, but I think they overshot that. I think it was before that, unfortunately. They really should have thought about going back in and shooting some extra scenes.
Yeah, reshoots. Well, because I was, when we sat down with Adele Parks and Jane Fallon recently, and they were talking about their writing process, and you were talking about your writing process. One thing that I keep thinking about, weirdly, is the fact that Adele writes one chapter, then the next chapter. She writes the book in complete sequence.
Yeah.
And actually, I would have thought that that would have made it a much longer, laborious process. I would feel as though you would need to roughly know some... I was just really intrigued by that.
That's how I write as well. So I write chronologically with a vague idea of what's coming up, but it will... so often change. That's one of the reasons I don't plan, because I could plan out an entire book chapter for chapter and then suddenly it just completely changes while you're writing it. And that sounds, I know, absurd to some people that don't write, because why would it change? You're the one doing it. And it's like, that is an excellent point, but also you both are the person doing it and you're not, because when you're writing a story, you're ideally serving the story. And it's a creative endeavor, so it's like cooking a meal. Like, you might be making shepherd's pie and you don't have any carrots if you put carrots in your shepherd's pie, so instead you'd put in some like swede or, you know, something that, so you're like, oh, I'll just try that, and I didn't know I was going to do that, but I actually love it, and now we're going to do that, and then maybe next time I'll put the carrot and the swede, you know. It's like, it's little additions that you didn't know were going to happen, and it changes the direction you were going in. And then you're not making shepherd's pie anymore, but you're making something else that you love. It's weird. It's such a strange process, and it's difficult to explain, because as they mentioned on an episode of Rick and Morty that I was watching the other day, it is creativity, and the creative process is closely aligned to being potentially mentally different. That's not the word they use, but it doesn't make sense logically, because it isn't a logical process.
I also wonder as well if, because you know that when you start writing a book, that it's going to be many months of your life.
Yeah.
And you can tell me if I've got holes in this, but every writing process is different. Every book has come together in a slightly different way. So I suppose when you stand on the precipice of day one, of like opening that document, that clean page is there in front of you, you actually... in many ways don't know what's going to happen. But does that feel weird?
Yeah. It's so weird, and it's every time it's the same, and I've talked to a lot of writers about it, so I cannot speak for all writers, but I can speak for a lot of writers who said that blank page is the most daunting thing, because like you say, looking at that blank page means you are about to commit yourself to many months of work, extremely vulnerable work that exposes you in ways you might not be ready for. Like, quite often writing will open a door to something you didn't know was going to come out, or that you're working through stuff you weren't expecting to. It also is vulnerable because it's going to be read by loads of people you don't know, who now, thanks to the internet, are going to come and tell you when it's shit. So like, all of this is weighing on you before you even start. And yeah, like you say, you never really know how it's going to go or what's going to happen. I mean, like, what a great metaphor for life. But you just don't know. You open it up and you just have to say, I'm going to do this now because I've said I'm going to do it. And what happens, happens, and we'll figure it out along the way. And maybe you have a vague plan. But then I know other people, and maybe they live their life that way as well, that how completely, completely, utterly planned out. And they'll have chapter cards and they'll know exactly what's going to happen in every single sentence before it happens. And that, to me, isn't fun, both in writing and, I guess, in life. I like to be surprised along the way. Makes it more interesting. I wouldn't be boring if you knew everything that was going to happen all the time.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think
comforting,
so.
Possibly. But you had to sit at a laptop for 8 months and stare at it. If you knew everything that was going to happen, that would be so tedious to me, to sit there for months on end and just write down what I know is already going to happen.
You've got your background blurred, but I think there's a child behind you, or a ghost cat.
Well, there is a young man strolling into the room right now. It's you guessed before he came. Hi, are you coming up? Oh, I got you. I've caught him.
Oh, there he is. Oh, hi, Anderson.
I caught my son. Did you come say hello to Auntie Emma? He's thinking about vocalizing.
He is thinking about a little meow.
No,
but leave me alone. For listeners who he's looking at me. Hi, Anderson. Anderson is one. He got a little meow. Anderson is one of Lindsay's cats.
He says enough.
And the first time I stayed with Lindsay in her old apartment, Anderson was very curious, but also very wary of me. And then when I arrived last time on the Taylor Swift trip, I sat down and instead of running away, he just stayed where he was, which was such progress.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. He's a very picky cat. He's a very, very picky cat.
And Belle didn't run away either.
No, Belle loves a petting. Belle wants that petting. So she will come for that petting. But Anderson is a notoriously tricksy, picky baby who is now just doing figure of eights underneath my chair for attention.
He wonders what's going to happen.
He hasn't been getting attention for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And he'd like it again.
What are these two banging on about?
He's heard it. He knows. He's heard exactly us bang on at length in the past.
Can we talk about stuff? And I know that might sound like a random thing to talk about, but I warned you, listeners. I did tell stuff. You. We'll be right back after this short break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Can we talk about stuff? And I know that might sound like a random thing to talk about, but I warned you, listeners, I did tell
stuff.
You. Lindsay and I have many conversations about stuff. And when you were just talking about the writing process there, it reminded me about the, I would say, threat level midnight level of distress I was in last Monday when I messaged you and said, why have I just thrown everything that I own onto the floor of my bedroom, clothes wise?
Yeah.
And what did you say? You said procrastination.
I mean, that's why, if you could see my room right now, that's what you would see. I have stuff everywhere because I am on, I've got 5 active projects at the moment. And my first draft is due in 3.5 weeks. So obviously I'm going to New York tomorrow. So I've got to pack.
And you're just
for that.
Back from Vegas.
And I'm just back from Vegas. I went to see Kylie, which was incredible. I decided to set myself a fun packing challenge. So I'm just going to do carry-on, which seemed rational until the weather in New York is going to be freezing. Much like yourself, everything I own is on the floor because that's now my challenge, is to pack a carry-on for New York for 5 nights when it is going to be like freezing. I'm coming from LA.
So we've talked a lot. We've talked a lot about how there's always this thing of needing something more. Mm-hmm. whilst and we're both very aware of it, and we understand that we are the problem, whilst also having enough, but we are such little piglets suckling at the teat of consumerism. That
yum 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 capitalism. Nom, 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 nom.
Well, exactly. It's like, you've got a perfectly wonderful white t-shirt that's great quality in your wardrobe, but then this season boat neck t-shirts are in, so now you feel as though you have a gaping hole in your wardrobe, and so on. The story could go on many, many different ways. And you've called it before purse piece. You've said that you'll never get purse piece.
Never get purse piece. No. And purse piece I stole from someone else. I can't take credit for purse piece. But that the idea of like having the perfect purse, would you ever be happy? Is there a handbag that will be the one thing that fills that hole and satiates you? And for a lot of people, this is so weird and it's so handbag niche, but a lot of people, it's the Chanel flat.
Yeah.
They think that's the bag that's going to complete them. I bought that handbag after I lost my mum and both my grandmothers in the space of 12 months. And I was on holiday with a friend in New Orleans, and they don't have sales tax, or they had very low sales tax. I can't remember exactly because I'd had a cocktail. I was like, I deserve this bag for grief reasons. And they had it. They had the one I wanted, which was black caviar leather with silver hardware, and the silver hardware one was always hard to find because most often they're gold. And some of us bought that handbag, had to call their credit card company and justify it, which I thought was a bit rough. But just let me have it. It's been hard year.
You had to call them to say I deserve this, or you had to call them to say
they
wasn't fraud?
Declined the card, and then they called the, I can't remember, was it Saks or whatever it was? They called them and they were like, can you put her on? And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to cut it up. Like I've seen on telly, but they were like, we just need to check that it's you. And I was like, of course it's me. Who else would it be? This fits my spending pattern perfectly, you idiots. And I felt bad about myself, not them. I didn't call them an idiot. I said, thank you for doing your job. Thank you for your service, lady at the credit card company.
How did you have to prove it was you? I mean, because I know that it would have been
date
of birth.
I don't
like
even
that,
think
I
did.
To be something
better. It was probably date of birth. I probably had to sing some Taylor Swift lyric. I don't remember exactly. Send them a photo of the cat. But they were just like, is it you? And I said, yeah. And they were like, cool. And then
what
they
age was Taylor Allison Swift when she first played the Bluebird Cafe?
I've been to the Bluebird Cafe, but not because of that, I should hasten to add. I really thought that this bag was going to make my life better because I was really miserable and it had been really rough and I've dreamed of this bag. So I bought it and it's still in the box in my cupboard. Actually, it's not. I took it out of the box in an attempt to make myself use it more. It is now just on a shelf in a dust bag, which felt like a real progression. I might have used it like twice this year, which is a big deal.
You do realise that that bag will have appreciated in value.
It massively has, because this is 9 years ago, 8 years ago, and they go up like a grand a year or something. Disgusting. Because I was actually looking at the price of them now for a book thing a couple of days ago, and I was like, they want how much for a mini? And I think the price of the mini now is what I paid for the jumbo, which is insane. Hi, sorry everyone. Chanel bag chat. I could never do it now. I don't think I could bring, even if I had so much money, if I was a bazillionaire, which I am clearly not, I don't think I could do it. It's terrifying to me.
I just can't with designer bags because, and this isn't a criticism of you and what you've done.
I mean, it's all accepted and justified.
It's simply for that reason, because I used to work with someone who had that bag and I would think, God, that looks really cool. But actually, I'm a much more practical person. Like I like a crossbody bag, can't be too big, can't be too small, has to be able to fit a small umbrella in and not weigh me down. Like I'm quite...
See, this
I'm
is
quite...
the biggest problem with the Chanel jumbo flap. It's huge, it's heavy, it's not especially spacious, and it's very uncomfortable to carry. And I'm also terrified to be out and about with it. So unless I'm driving to and from somewhere, I don't feel comfortable taking it anyway, which is insane. It's completely insane. It's just not especially practical. But it wasn't a practical decision. It was a It was
I understand that. But I'm focusing now this year, for example, on trying not to constantly feel sort of quench that thirst of wanting something new new. And this is a terrible thing that I'm about to admit, and I haven't even told you this yet, I don't think. So I know, exciting. A little while ago, Skims sent me an email saying, "Hey Emma, how about 25% off?" Came out of nowhere. I didn't ask for it. I hadn't bought much especially. But obviously, I'm always banging on about Skims. Everything I've bought, the quality has been incredible. So I thought, actually, yes, I do want the black t-shirt style bodysuit. But if I'm going to get 25% off, I better get something else, because then I'll also get the free shipping. So it's almost like I'm taking money out of Kim's pocket. Or is that Anderson again?
And well, I feel like you're giving away free money if you don't use a discount that's been offered, even though, I mean, I know the theory of girl math is questionable. I did see someone on TikTok referring to it as girl calculus, which I thought was much better, because he's like, you're not doing yourself justice here, girls, the way that you are working things out. And I thought that was amazing. It's like, he's right. We do work really hard to make this make sense.
It's almost as though you've forgotten that you sent me that last night.
Oh, I did.
It was about, you're not giving yourself enough credit, because I say someone's first name, some girl's first name, and of whoever's dating your ex-boyfriend, and you know her entire, where she went to school, what job she, that is girl calculus. But
girl
anyway,
FBI.
But I bought at the same time a black long sleeve t-shirt, and I thought that'll be excellent for autumn. So you can imagine my surprise when last week I'm clearing out the wardrobe and I find it, having completely forgotten that it was there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I thought, Emma,
you're
disgusting.
But also, like, you just got an extra treat. You just passed Emma. This is why I was pro-girl math when other people were against girl math, because in my mind, I'm like, past Emma just bought present Emma a gift of a long sleeve t-shirt that she didn't know she had, and now you can wear it. I'm disgusting. Like, the more stressed I am and the more work that I have piling up, the more packages will arrive at my house. Because add to cart is a real coping mechanism that I need to break out of. And I have, same as you, I've actively said, I'm not going to do this. And for a long time it was makeup, because makeup makes me really happy. I love makeup. I was buying a lot of makeup, and then I didn't buy any makeup for a really long time. And then just recently I've got quite back into makeup again. And there's been quite a lot of fun new launches that I've felt that I had to own.
Well, tell me what they were.
Do you know what? I really love this year's Hourglass Ambient Palette. I absolutely love the palette this year. And I haven't bought one or even been interested in buying one since the Ghost Palette, which I think was 2018 or 2019. I think it was 2018, because I think I wore it when I got married in 2019. So it's been a while since I've been interested in the ambient palettes. What else have I got that I love? Have you seen the Boss Up Cosmetics lip changing oil on the tickety tock? The old tickety tock?
I can't get it over here, can I?
They ship to the UK now. But it's like a color changing lip oil. I don't think you would like the color changing one, because it's very pink. It's that pH shift pink.
Right.
But I love that pink because I love the Dior lip glows. It just really suits me. I'm very pale, and that pink really brightens up my face. And the gloss is insane. And you put the gloss on and it shifts, and then you can wipe it off and you just have this perfect stain, and it lasts and it's gorgeous. But I also got one of their clear oils because of free shipping. And I love them. And I think they're £12 in the UK, which is a lot cheaper than a Dior lip oil. But also, she says literally with my hand right now, the Elf lip oils I really like.
I need to get my hands on cheaper. Some of those.
Yeah, these are $8 here. I think they're £8 in the UK as well.
Bro.
I also, everything is within reach. I have the REM sweetener foundation, which I'm not certain on yet. It's drier than I expected.
You know what you might like? The Shiseido Revital Essence foundation, skin enhancing. Maybe. That, and also the Hourglass, the Nuvale one. That.
Oh yeah, because I hated the last few Hourglass. The Hourglass stick, dreadful for me. And the Hourglass, the foundation they did that was supposed to be like 2 drops and it will cover your whole face. I'm like, wow, this is one of the worst foundations I've ever tried. And they spent so much money on that. And I went to the launch in LA and I was gobsmacked at how poor it was. And I knew someone that worked there in the LA office for a while, and she then didn't work there, and she was like, oh yeah, that was an absolute disaster. I was like, wow, well done.
The new one's amazing. The Glossier stretch,
everything
too.
They're doing now is gorgeous. I've heard amazing things about the Glossier stretch. Foundation is one of my biggest downfalls. Foundation is my new purse piece, and if I could find my perfect foundation, my whole life would be better.
So this is a really good point. You and I have both worn our perfect foundation.
Yeah,
but more than once, because depending on what our skin's doing, depending on what the weather's like, we probably have found it, but we're never ever going to narrow it down to just one, ever.
I feel comfortable that, and it's not, my perfect foundation is sadly two foundations blended together, which is really offensive, but it's the same foundation. Really... But it's the Dior Forever Matte and Glow. And I find the matte one can be a little bit clingy to dry patches because my skin's a lot drier than it used to be. And the Glow, I don't want to overpowder it. But I found if I do one pump of each, it's actually the perfect satin finish. Because obviously the Glow waters down the powders in the matte. And it just gives it a really perfect mix. And I've convinced myself that that's okay. Because yes, I'm buying two foundations instead of one, but they do last twice as long. Because you're using one pump of each. So it's not like buying two different foundations. And it lasts forever. I've had these two bottles for about a year. And I've rebought it one time. And I do... that's the thing I keep coming back to. And I tried the Maybelline skin tint this year. I went back to Armani Luminous Silk, which I used for years, but now for whatever reason it's not got enough coverage in it for me. I don't know what happened. It's not us, but I wore Luminous Silk for absolutely years, and I'm like, why does it look as good? I'm like, oh, because you're 10 years older than the last time you used it, you daft cow. The Elf Camo Concealer I really like. I've been using that instead of a foundation sometimes if I've got a nicely moisturized face.
So I think, based on what you just said about the finish you like, have you ever tried the Lisa Eldridge foundation? Seamless skin.
I haven't because I don't like buying stuff. I don't like buying foundation anymore unless I can go in and color match. And I meant to go and try it in London when I was in London, and I didn't have the time to get in. And I know you can buy the color match, and I'm
no,
but I haven't. I really like, it used to be really easy for me because I'm very pale, and my foundation in every line was just the palest one.
Bare 01.
Yeah, when everything was super limited, it was really easy. And now that companies have actually woken up and realized that there are many, many, many other skin tones that they weren't taking into account on both ends of the spectrum. And especially with now undertones are being addressed, which is amazing. I really do have to color match. And I cannot spend a Lisa Eldridge amount of money without color matching it.
So next time you're over here on tour, we have to make a special trip to her concession in Selfridges.
What a nightmare.
It's going to be so bad. I will have to pull you by your hair. Lindsay,
yeah, you might have to hold my credit card and be in charge of what I do and don't buy. It's a big
really
thing
disastrous.
In the author community. I will say there's like a big love for Lisa Eldridge lipsticks in particular in the author community. A lot of authors I know, that's their go-to.
Do you think that on a lot of writing days when you don't need to get ready, that a lot of authors just kind of put on their comfies, tie their hair back, might not put on any makeup, but they do put on a cracking lippy?
I'm sure they do. I have to put some makeup on to be functioning, and it is same. Purely psychological. Like, I could still be in my pajamas, but I'll go and wash my face, do my skincare, and I'll put on concealer and mascara and blusher, and then I'll feel like I'm part of the world. I might not wash my hair for like a week, but I will absolutely, she says, I have washed it, I swear. But I will 100% do my makeup just to feel like I'm a functioning member of society.
Well, the reason we can't really delve into more stuff, but maybe another time. But the reason why we are having this conversation at this particular point in time is because the Christmas Witch paperback edition is out. Do you say paperback edition or just paperback?
Paperback
is out.
Paperback edition anyway.
We're both holding up. I've got the hardback. I don't have the paperback yet.
It's not out yet. So.
Well, no, but normally I wangle a.
Yeah, well.
Oh, no, this, mine signed
I
by the author.
I didn't think that ahead. Oh, that's me.
Because I always pre-order your books. And then I usually very kindly receive one. And so I sometimes send it to Nick, or just I gift it to a worthy recipient.
Beloved Nick.
One that isn't signed. Beloved Nick. Nick Hayes / Nick Chapman from Pixie Woo, who is part of our crew who we adore. So what I specifically wanted to ask you about the Christmas wish, and I don't think I've ever asked you about this on tape before, but I think it also really became incredibly clear to me reading Love Me Do, is how you have an absolutely incredible skill for writing the from the perspective of the, I don't know, the matriarch, but it's like the octogenarian matriarch, because you have, there's a very specific character in Love Me Do who every time she's on the page, it's almost like, did you read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yes.
So for me, I felt like every page, particularly in the last two books that Lisbeth Salander wasn't on, I was like rushing to get through them to get to when she would be back on the page. And I feel like that about that character in Love Me Do. But I also think there is a particular monologue at the end, towards the end of The Christmas Wish, that made me cry hearty, big, fat, salty tears that rolled down my face. And what occurred to me was, and at that point, I was completely divorced from the fact that it was you writing it, my friend, who I talked to a lot about Taylor Swift stuff and Michaela. I was totally in that moment. And I remember having this realization of, oh my God, how does she do it? How do you, I know that you joke and call yourself a nana, but how do you have this perspective? Because it's very worldly wise, and it doesn't come across as trite. It doesn't come across as trying to be the matriarch. It feels very, very real.
I do love, it turns out my safe space in writing is an 82-year-old, whether it's a grandmother or not, is an 82-year-old woman. So in The Christmas Wish, we have Mafamwi, who is Nan to the Baker family. In Love Me Do, we had the extraordinary Myrna Moore. It might be the only time when I can like genuinely congratulate myself, because I'm so proud of it, because I love her so much. And Myrna was a former Hollywood actress who got out of the industry, had quite a lot of mad stuff happen to her, and basically just, you know, the rumor is that Myrna's a recluse, but she's not a recluse, she's just not interested in your shit. And she's dead keen to tell you that. And I loved writing them both so much. It's actually, I'm writing another book now, right, next year's book, and it's killing me to not write a wise sage Nan, because you can't keep doing the same thing, even though Mafamwi and Myrna were very different. It's my favorite character to write, and I think, I don't know if it's that they're super smart, it's just that they have literally no fucks. They have zero of them. Their fuck basket is empty. It has been depleted. They are sans fucks. Like, there's none left. If they ever had any, and the fuck basket said, come and get some more, and they said, no thanks. And that is such a freeing character to write. And I think the idea of being that woman is, it might be nice. I'm like, God, imagine. And it must be in us all, because if I can write it, it's in me. And I've never had a response to a character, a side character at least, like the response to Myrna Moore.
Yeah.
People just loved her. I'm like, but if you love her that much and you identified with her that much, she's in all of us. And it must be something we want and aspire to, but we don't feel like we can have yet. Or that we feel like, oh, that would be so naughty to say those things in real life. And it's like, no, it wouldn't, if that's your opinion, if that's how you feel about things. And I hate the thought that we have to wait until we're older to know these things, in inverted commas, because we already know them. And it's that shitty thing that happens every year you get older, that you're like, oh, I won't feel differently when I'm 10 years older than now. I am X, Y, Z, the things I believe about myself. And then you do get 10 years older and you're like, oh shit, I was wrong. But you just keep doing the same thing. And I feel like I do feel it more and more and more. And everyone that told me when I was younger, all the things that have turned out to be true, and I just didn't want to believe them. And I do think that's why people really, why a character like Myrna or Mafamwi in The Christmas Wish resonates with people. Because we do know these things that they're saying are true, but we either can't give ourselves permission to believe them yet, or society won't allow us that freedom yet.
Or we hope that it won't be that way, because actually we sometimes don't like what they are telling us.
I know, it's true, it's true. I mean, I'm always thinking about things that, you know, I look at old photos of myself when I hated myself or I was so unhappy. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, when you're 40, you'll look at those pictures of you when you were 30 and you'll think, what beautiful young thing. And I was like, no, I won't. And now I'm like, look at that. Look at all that collagen. Now you're laid under a current body red light mask for 10 minutes every single day, praying for that collagen to come back. And it's dumb stuff like that. But also all the other bigger things, like the stuff I allowed, the way I allowed people to treat me and the way I allowed, and not just romantic relationships. I know that's always the thing people think of, but like friendships and work situations and everything, stuff I just... Even family relationships, the way I let people talk to me and treat me, that I would never allow people to talk to my friends that way. And, you know, people say, no, when you're older, you'll understand why you won't put up with that shit. And I feel like now I am old enough to understand why I shouldn't put up with that shit. But I haven't quite made it to old enough where I will not put up with that shit.
What I like about this and the way that you're explaining it is it makes me think that actually Myrna is somebody within you, Myrna in inverted commas, a version of Myrna.
She definitely is. Yeah, it's terrifying.
Maybe you're not suppressing her, but she's not quite yet cooked, but she's there.
She's like cookie dough Buffy. She's not ready yet. You know, like I knew we'd get a Buffy reference in somehow. Also, I feel like I can unleash my Myrna for other people, but I can't unleash my Myrna for myself yet. And maybe that's the difference.
So you said something on text message the other night. You said that you said something negative about yourself. And I was like, don't talk crap about my friend.
Oh, yeah. I think I called myself a hag. I called myself a hag. And you said, don't talk to my friend like that. And I was like, well, facts is facts.
But because of you, I am now too under the current body LED face mask 10 minutes a day praying for it to do something good.
I just got an email saying like it's on a massive deep discount right now, and I'm like, you bastards. But good for the people that will get it for a good deal. I wouldn't send it back for anything. I have bought so many things, I've had so many treatments, I've spent so much disgusting money trying to, like, again, purse piece, but face piece, I guess. Current body mask is the first thing I have purchased for myself or done for myself that I have said, oh wow, okay, this is doing a thing.
As I said to you about 2 weeks ago, because I complimented your hair color, because your hair color has changed a little bit recently. Yeah. And you said, I said, oh my God, your hair color, it's really making your skin look good. Because that's a thing. I wasn't just being daft.
Yeah, no, skin tone, colors, hair color definitely has
you can't
made
see
my
it
skin
because
tone.
The lighting in here is terrible because I've got an energy saving light bulb, but my hair color is very different, but it looks absolutely the same on camera.
But I believe you. I absolutely believe you. I've got the weirdest light in here at the moment, so...
But you said, oh, but Emma, I'm using the current body. And so I dusted mine off, and absolutely after I shower, when I have no skincare on, I have my little 10 minute rest listening to an audiobook. Last night, you'd be very proud, came home late, as you know, because I was whinging about my Uber driver on text message to you. Didn't get home till quite late, but I still took all my makeup off and did my 10 minutes listening to.
So proud of you.
Actually, I was listening to myself, which is really
love it. Even better. Is that the best self-care?
I was on another podcast. I was on the Brain Over Binge podcast, and it had just gone live. And I thought, I better check I don't sound like a moron.
Nice. And a bit late now.
Yeah,
I surely won't be listening to this back. No, I genuinely have seen a massive, massive improvement in skin tone and clarity. And I think a little bit of looks a little bit more plump in the face. We'll see, but skin tone and clarity, absolutely. Like, I'm barely wearing foundation at the moment. Like, I'm using concealer, and like the last time I did a full face of foundation was Kylie on Friday night in Vegas, where I felt, you know what I mean? You've got to show out for Kylie, haven't you? And
you've
I would never
show out
without
Kylie,
foundation.
But you will be able to tell listeners about the fact that the windows and the lighting in hotels in Las Vegas yes. are not okay. And I didn't quite understand at the time, but there was a very weird, like, blue hue in that hotel. We stayed at Mandalay.
Yeah.
And so when we got to the stadium, when we were in natural daylight, and I think you said something to me about my highlighter being a choice. I had gone so heavy on the highlighter because I was using an Hourglass palette, one of the ambient light ones, the one with the elephant on. And I really had gone heavier than I've ever gone.
I mean, it was right for the time because we were at the Eras tour, so it felt right. But yeah, they, because Vegas is so bright and in the desert, a lot of the rooms put this blue film on the windows to block out some of the light. But what then happens is some of
ladies do their makeup badly.
Yeah, some of us go a little bit hard, and it can, because it looks so blue, you look so washed out. And I remember looking at myself in a mirror and being like, well, look at that, season one Sarah Jessica Parker Sex and the City blusher, just like neon pink cheeks. And I was like, I like a pink cheek, I like to look healthy, this is Aunt Sally, this is not okay. Yeah, and I did it again when we went to Kylie. I looked in the mirror, I'm like, you daft cow, I have done it again.
And we saw some sights at Taylor Swift. No one noticed us. We looked demure and somber compared to everyone.
Absolutely.
I think she might have seen
gold sequin
us.
Hot pants, and it looked understated. Let's keep that in mind.
Yes.
I loved it, yeah. I wore the same hot pants for Kylie, I just realised. They're now officially my Vegas hot pants.
Are you worried that somebody in Vegas saw you on both trips and thought you only had a limited number of clothes?
I am now.
Oh my God, I think she's only got the one pair of pants.
I am such a monster for shopping, as we've established, and needing the next thing. I've had those gold sequin hot pants for so long. They're from Zara. I bought them in Toronto. They are magnificent. They're the perfect cut because they're not tight. They're just comfy. And it's almost like they feel like you're just wearing like comfies, which sounds mad because they're gold sequin hot pants. But I feel like you can really dress them up or down. People, you might not think about it, but they're such a good neutral.
But no, I agree with you. But I also think that you can buy one perfect pair of sequin hot pants, and then for the next few months, you are very open to another great pair of sequin hot pants. But you might
absolutely
buy them and they never... Because do you remember a couple of years ago, and this is during lockdown, ladies and gentlemen, I bought a really nice Western cut plaid shirt, dark blue, red accents, and I was so happy with it. And then a few days later, I was watching a film with Dakota Johnson where she was hiking and she had a plaid shirt, but she had sort of tied it around herself in a very weird way. And I took a picture of the television screen. I was like, Lindsay, why do I feel like I need one of these? And of course, because it was in the sale on ASOS, then one appears, and that's obviously been vacuum packed under the bed recently.
Yeah, of course. No, that's another massive problem of mine is if I like something, I will do that thing where I'm like, oh my God, it fits. It's gorgeous. It's perfect. Do they have it in more colors? I should get more of them. And that's one thing that I'm really stopping doing because it turns out I don't need more of them. Like, you've got one. You don't need, how many are you going to wear, you daft cow? Which is me talking to me. I'm wearing my pajama bottom still and it's 10:30 in the morning. Like, why would I need this many pairs of jeans in my life?
You can talk to me that way as well if you want. I'm going to let us in because you do have to get on and I've obviously got to go back to bed. But basically, it's only 6:30 here, but it's been a very wet and dreary day and I just want to snuggle up in bed and watch
winter.
Telly.
Any of us that aren't in bed at any given moment deserve a medal.
I need you to give me an honest reaction about whether to walk away or press pay. That's a good game.
Yeah.
I got served an advert last night on Instagram for a t-shirt that will be 30% off for the next, I think it's 7.5 hours.
That
t-shirt says Nakatomi Plaza Christmas Party 1986.
Oh, bye. Get, how many colours do they have?
Four, but I want the white.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. No, I'm a huge diehard advocate. It is a Christmas movie. I will fight people. I have a diehard advent calendar that I got last year and it came too late. I must get you
not,
one.
Not but the one where Hans Gruber falls.
Yes, like he falls down the Nakatomi Plaza. Yeah, it's magnificent. It's magnificent. I had a meeting once at the building that is Nakatomi Plaza in the movie and I've never been so excited / unprofessional in my entire life that I just kept screaming at people, I'm in the Nakatomi Plaza.
I don't believe you. I think you have been more unprofessional.
That's fair. That's a fair statement. But it was pretty unprofessional.
Have I seen the Nakatomi? Did you point it out to me?
I don't know. You might have seen it from the freeway. It's in Studio City. It's Fox. It's one of the Fox buildings.
Okay.
So you can see it from the freeway going out towards Santa Monica. From where I live, but it's still dead exciting every time I see it. It's so exciting.
It is. Maybe that's what I'm getting you for Christmas, Lindsay.
The actual Nakatomi Plaza.
Is that your Christmas wish? A Nakatomi Plaza t-shirt.
It might be. Oh God. It's time to watch it.
Time to watch it. Well, not until December 1st. We've got a few weeks.
But I'm getting my LASIK on December 1st, so I should get 2 extra days of December added onto November to make up for the fact I won't be able to see anything.
Let's do a watch party where either before you have the LASIK or after, and we'll do a watch party and watch Die Hard.
Fair enough.
I don't know how I feel about the advent calendar because I just love Alan Rickman so much, and it might feel a bit morbid.
I think it's okay because I also love him beyond the telling. I went to see his play in New York twice because I just love him. In fact, I don't see him in 2 plays in New York, but I saw Seminar twice. And he's an angel and I loved him completely. He's so perfect. I like to think that advent calendar brings us closer together. I think it's what he would have wanted. I don't think it's what he would have wanted at all from his diaries. But it's what he got. So it's where we are.
That's where we are. See, speaking of Easter eggs, Snape is a fantastically written Easter egg laden character in Harry Potter. Because once you know stuff, no spoilers, and then you go back, you're like, ooh.
Maybe that's just I have nothing good to say about the author of those books, but I have a lot of good to say about Alan Rickman and everything he's ever done.
Yes.
I love him. I love him.
Yes, we all, anyone, if you ever hear any stories about people who like waited for signatures outside the stage door, autographs, sorry, not signatures, everybody always says.
Waiting that, for a signature on some papers.
Credit card board, legal documents. They always say that he was just an absolute angel and took real time to, in the same way.
I only heard that he was amazing.
Taylor Alison Swift, if she sees a child, she rarely walks past them. She will make sure she goes back.
Nuts. And during the Kylie show, a gentleman very close to the stage was having a big cry because he just clearly could not deal with it. And she sort of stopped.
Was it Kevin?
Was like, are you crying? Yeah, it was our friend Kevin. And she was like, are you crying? And bent down and gave him a big hug. And then he just went full, he turned into a statue. I was like, you've broken him, Kylie. Aww. You haven't made it better. You've broken this man. He was just stood staring. And I was like, that must have been amazing. That must have been so magical for that grown man.
There's a lot more that I could talk to you about, and I think listeners have probably gathered that we could just keep going with sense, structure or anything. And I would have actually, I should have asked you about your YA novel. I can't say young adult. I have to say young adult.
I know. Young adult. Yeah, same. Young adult. That's coming out in 2024. Well, we don't have a date yet exactly, so... I'll come back and talk about it another time.
Come back and talk about it. Because that one I'm interested to talk to you about, because that one is supernatural.
Yes, it is witches and stuff.
So it's a whole new muscle. It's a whole new writing muscle that you're having to flex and build and grow. So I'm intrigued to talk about that. But we won't do it today because we've covered a lot of ground. And now I do need to tell you, I think the opening of Style might be the best opening of a song ever.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Because as soon as it starts, I'm in a car, and you can see because I'm making the gestures. Yeah. I've got my hands on
the
steering wheel.
You're driving a car.
10 to 2.
Maybe like a old, like vintage Mercedes or something, like a very shiny black vintage Mercedes.
I was thinking Juan Felipe's Jaguar from Cruel Intentions.
Oh,
but we're going down a very empty dual carriageway.
But I see where we're going. Yeah,
at night.
Yeah. Perfect. That was the Taylor Swift song in the style of the gentleman that said there's one song that gets everyone. That was the Swift song that I got Jeff with. That was my husband's gateway drug, Style. And he was like, oh, it's very good. I'm like, it is, yeah.
But she's really kind of sexed it up for the Taylor's version. It's kind of grittier. There's something dirtier about it. So
I mean, the Taylor's version podcast chat would be a whole other hour.
Well, and the other thing
just
I meant to talk
1989.
To you about, just for 1989, the other thing that we need to talk about at length, and that I have already said that we should do, but listeners will have gathered that I've got a lot on, and you definitely have a lot on, but I honestly believe that you and I should do a My So-Called Life rewatch, where we break down every episode, because I think... I think that would be the making of us.
And there aren't that many episodes, so I always think there are more, but it was very limited.
And actually, I started listening...
Such a culturally impactful show.
I think the fact that it got cancelled is why it had such cultural impact, because I think it left us with more questions than it answered. But it did give us Jared Leto, which is a shame.
I mean, it's the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. And by the Lord, I do mean Claire Danes. I mean, it's tough. That's a difficult one.
It is a difficult one.
Jordan Catalano forever, though.
I also, Jordan Catalano forever, but Wilson Cruz for me. Wilson Cruz.
Oh, fair enough.
Ricky Vasquez, Enrique, is the, when I think about certain scenes, I can cry on demand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Jordan Catalano wasn't making you cry for any other reason other than he was laying a foundation for a really upsetting romantic life for me for the first 10 years of my romantic life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
he calls Jordan.
And I would, one of my dream podcast guests is actually Winnie Holzman. Because not only
Putting
did she write My So-Called Life, and she was one of the teachers whose name I've now forgotten, but she also wrote Wicked.
I mean, what a champ.
I know.
Get her on, Emma. Jesus.
I will. I'm going to get off this call and I'm going to ring her. Like,
get on the phone. Stop talking to me.
Thank you for taking this time and for giving me your entire morning. You're a legend. The link to the Christmas Witch, the links to your blur is blurring. It's like China doesn't want us to see. The links to the Christmas Witch will be in the show notes, but I will also put the links to all of Lindsay's other books, her social media, and that's obviously something you should follow her, because then you'll find out about, and she's got a Substack now, haven't you?
I do have a Substack now. She's, they finally got me. That was the thing that finally got me. That was like, if they don't stop talking to me about it, I'm going to throw Substack off a cliff. And instead I joined it. Yeah, I started a Substack, which anyone who's made it this far through this chat will not be shocked to find out is largely about getting yourself a little treat. Recommendations for a little treat. Which I'm really enjoying sharing. That.
Fabulous. Fabulous. I'm going to go and sit under my current body for 10 minutes.
I was wondering if I sit under it for longer, what would happen? But apparently nothing. So,
no, I spoke to Alice Hart Davis about this a while ago. You can get great results. It's just about using it very regularly, i.e. don't just use it once a month. Use it. I mean, I'm probably managing 5 times a week, not 7 days a week.
Yeah, I've been, because it says 3 to 5, and I'm like, but I feel like I can do every day if I commit to it. And I don't think that's going to hurt, but I guess it's not necessarily necessary.
Yeah. So the experts say, as long as you're using it that frequency,
consistent,
then you're grand. Yeah. So yeah, let's go and do that now.
Yeah, let's go and do that now.
Thank you for coming back.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I'm sorry to anyone who was waiting for Crocodile or Chris chat. We've let you down, but that next time.
Chris chat.
Chris's and Crocodiles.
I really felt like we exhausted Crocodiles and Chris's last time around. And I'm over Chris's.
Even Chris Pine in his little shorts, his slutty little shorts.
Okay, so here's the thing. Last time when we talked, because we're going to have to talk about it now. So thanks, that's your morning room. So last time we spoke, the senescence, what's it called again?
Negligible senescence.
Negligible senescence, which is the key to eternal youth. Which Lindsay has uncovered, but a scientist is definitely going to patent and make money on. That was on a podcast that we must have recorded in 2018.
So long ago.
No, before that, 2017. Anyway, we also talked about the Chris's, because at the time Marvel was big and I was very into Chris Evans. Now, no, not
Dead
at all. So
Dead
it was Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, Chris Pine and Chris Pratt. And actually, do you know what? Pine was the underdog.
Pine's been my favorite for so long, and not just because he lives local and supports our local bookshop. I've got a lot of time for his new mad art teacher vibe. I'm very into it. I like that he just drives around in that little vintage porch wearing like a dressing gown. I'm all in. I think he needs to come back, but possibly not with that film that he wrote and directed that apparently is terrible.
Was he in Dungeons and Dragons or something?
He was in Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, right. I watched that.
Yeah, but we'll watch anything.
That's true.
So he's now my favorite Chris, and the others. I did enjoy Chris Hemsworth in Limitless.
I've got no problem with Hemsworth.
Hemsworth, I think, is golden, but Pratt and Evans. No. Yeah. Bye bye.
It's unfortunate. Chris Evans, but this is what happens when you act completely out of character in your final Marvel movie. And that's for another podcast for another time. Captain America never would have done that. Captain America never would have just been like, peace out, kids. So out of character for Captain America as who and what he was, when he was just like, no, I'm going to go back in time and completely change
everything
and make it work for me. And then, no, I'm not going to tell you what I did. And it's like, what? Anyway, that's for me to worry about.
We definitely need to take that conversation offline, because that's a thread that I hadn't yet pulled at. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Anderson, for your guest appearance. And all of the links I've discussed will be in the show notes. I think he's gone. Is he gone or is he behind you?
He's sat behind me somewhere, being emotionally withholding. Yeah.
As cats like to do. Right. Sling thine hook, but keep writing excellent stuff and come back soon.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I do hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time hugely. If you did enjoy it and you never want to miss an episode, then please do hit the subscribe button wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. It's also where you get the opportunity to leave a 5-star review and a rating for how you feel about the show. And I'd be so grateful if you wouldn't mind leaving one. If you want to get in touch with me, email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Or you can DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. If you fancy chatting to me and thousands of other fellow listeners of the podcast, then click the link to join the Facebook forum. The link to join is in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. You have to answer a couple of questions, but we cannot wait to see you there. Come over and join the conversation. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.